Burton Radio.
I'm Ray Burton, and welcome to another Let's Talk Gardening podcast. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative topics and up-to-date information. My co-host is Faye Caro, an award-winning gardener, horticulturalist and media presenter. Faye's passion is educating people. Oh, and she loves bugs a lot too. My passion is simply beautiful, healthy gardens. And together, each week, we cover many great gardening subjects.
Saturday morning and here come the girls, Ray and Faye, with Let's Talk Gardening.
Hey gardening friends, good to be with you. As always, we are ready to go. We're all organised out there. We have Bev Daring and we have John Glidden on the other side of the glass, chomping at the bit. Our number, 94841927. You can email if you prefer to email rather than phone, gardening@curtainfm.com.au. Salutations to Chris Bartlett and his dapper PA, Peter Kelly, for kicking off the weekend again in perfect nostalgic style and always a dash of humour. And our cycling DJ, Jim Crinan, presented the cycling wrap-up just now, and we will catch him next Saturday. And I think that's my little bit, my little spiel. Good morning, Faye.
Good morning, Ray. How are you today?
Good, good. I just wanted to say thank you to Chris for filling in for me last week. So it's very, very good. No, it's good. The weather's just a little bit better. Today's warmer than I'd like.
Well, it's lovely and chilly out there in the mornings now, some of the days.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's turned. It feels a bit more like autumn rain.
Yeah,
the garden's breathing a sigh of relief.
There's a lot of recovery going on out there, I've noticed, with plants and new growth. And
it's like another spring.
Yeah, so thank goodness for that after what we've all been through. We've got a special guest this morning, Daniel Vereschetti, coming in from Coast Road Palms. We love having Daniel in the studio. He's the most laid-back dude ever, and he's just great fun and very, very informative. He'll be joining us at 20 to 9. So any of those tropical gardening questions, he's your man. And we're also crossing at 20 past 8 to David Anderson. His open garden. Open gardens are kicking off. It's great. It's great. It really gives everything an oomph through autumn, winter, spring.
It'd be a great time to have a garden open with that little bit of reprieve from the weather, and things are still growing and putting on new growth, and lots is bursting into flower too.
Yeah, I've got a bit going on in my garden. So something, settles down and then something takes off, and this is what we ultimately strive for, don't we? So I think we will speak to David at 20 past 8, learn what happens at his garden called Tropical Hideaway, what you could expect to see. I believe it's a smaller garden, but a garden with a lot of oomph, and that is in Winthrop. And that's happening next weekend, 23rd and 24th of March. And Faye and I are away next weekend. Chris is going to be playing a music program. He can answer your gardening questions too if you so feel you want to put Chris under pressure. I'm just joking. And we're away in Melbourne. We're going to the Melbourne International Flower Garden Festival.
Homework, folks.
Yeah, research. Strictly research, yeah. So we're looking forward to that because I haven't been over there since 2000 and whenever. It's been about 5 years.
Well, we had a bit of a setback. We were headed off and COVID kicked in. So that delayed
everything.
Our plans.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been a while, so I'm looking forward to seeing what I can see and not being able to bring anything back and coming back with lots of ideas and inspiration, rip the garden out, start again. That's what sort of happens sometimes when you go to these places and see their beautiful design gardens and trends. And sometimes what old is new again too. Sometimes you're looking for new plants, but sometimes they reintroduce them. And, yeah,
it's so we'll have lots to talk about the week after. We'll be able to let you know what we've seen. I'm sure we'll be able to put some photos on Facebook.
Yeah, because I love garden design. So for me, the design gardens over there are my thing. That's what I really enjoy the most. Yeah, everyone has their passion.
Do it on a large scale.
Yeah, Yeah, it's the biggest gardening show in the Southern Hemisphere, so that's quite a feather in their cap. And I imagine good crowds, and I've checked the weather, the low 20s, and I'm like, yes, that's my go. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that. So, yeah, there won't be a gardening show next weekend. So you better get your calls in now, 94841927. Tell me about your week.
Oh, well.
Where does it begin?
Well,
where do you begin?
Preparing the patio plants, hothouse plants, ready for someone else to look after them while I'm away. So that's a mammoth effort. I've tried to group them all in one place. That one place is packed to the rafters. And, I've done the best I can. But a lot of those plants are pretty hardy. A lot of them are aroids and foliage plants.
They don't need a lot of water.
A spritz a couple of times a week will do it. And if they miss out, they'll still be alive when I get back.
Uh-huh.
The big risk is overwatering, but, the potting mix is free draining. As long as they're not sitting in water, and even if they were sitting in for a week, that I'd probably be able to save them. So
it is hard when you have a garden and just trying to go away and have a holiday. My goodness.
I was thinking, Ray, maybe I need to do a little video like, oh, this is a bit wussy. It doesn't like to be too wet. This one stays wet. Now, when you water that, make sure the hose fills the pot so that the water actually drains out and wets all the potting mix. Just watch the sun if it comes in on that angle.
We know. But it's hard to reiterate that to someone else.
And the ones at the back, you kind of have to stand there with the spray on because the leaves kind of do this umbrella effect. So you can water, but all the water will run off. So just make sure the hose gets in the top of the pot. There's a pot there. Yeah. It's under all that foliage.
Yeah. And that's the trouble with it. Well, it's, getting... people that help us in these times that are not necessarily as garden oriented as we are. Yes, and hosing is an art.
Well, I like the finger on the hose. Those silly hose fitting things run down your arm.
They drive me crazy. Yeah. I like the finger on the hose.
I don't like the welded end hoses. Yeah. In fact, I'm just about to cut a couple
quite
off.
Cumbersome. I think, and annoying, and I agree with you. The old-fashioned finger over the hose gets it done, and you feel like
you've got
control.
Well, you can adjust the
spray. That's how I prefer to operate.
And you know what? Plants love water on their leaves. I don't care if it's 40 degrees and you stand there and you spritz it, just like us.
It's refreshing.
It doesn't cause burn on the plants unless, of course, you turn on the hose and shoot that water out straight away and you've got burning water in the hose.
Yeah. That's something that will do it. I noticed very much when we had that heat spells in February. I had to run that hose a little bit because it was surprising how hot the water was in there.
Yeah. And that you could get caught out. Well, you could burn your finger.
Definitely. It was red hot. And
not to mention the paving. Don't get caught out on hot paving with bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's behind us. It's just a memory. Yeah. We've moved on.
Yeah, a blurred. Yes, we have. And you've got a beautiful basket of gorgeous colours of goodies that you've brought into the station this morning. Admiring. It's very, very cheery.
It's a bucket, Ray. Well, it's a waste paper bin.
Yeah.
And they are $2.50 at IKEA.
I reckon that's a bargain.
Well, and for the larger plants, aroids, you want a bit of stability. These worked fabulously.
Because they've got a bit of height.
Well, they've got the height. They've got you can put a decent sized pot in it. So you can water the pot and some water will stay in the bottom. I could tell when there was too much water in the bottom because the leaves would start to go yellow. So that was my first sign they were getting too much water. But at $2.50, I've now got about 20.
Have you?
My aroids, the bigger ones with their totem poles, look amazing. It just gives this uniform look.
Yeah, exactly. And I love white and I'm with you. I might have to go and invest in some of those as well. They look great.
Well, what you could do to avoid the risk of them drowning is to drill a hole partway up so you've got limited water that's able to sit in there. I mean, they're great for indoors. You can swap them around and they look amazing. They're ribbed and they're probably 30 centimetres at the top and probably about 20-ish at the base. So, yeah, they just look really good. So there's a little top tip for people looking to jazz up their pots.
Yeah, yeah. And uniformity with your pots in colouring does look much more aesthetically pleasing, I think, than higgledy-piggledy.
I've gone for black.
Yeah.
Like I don't repot unless it's into black.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, yeah. It looks much more professional. I've learnt that from John Banisevich.
Oh, yes.
You admire the way his pots all look.
Yeah, quite right. Because we tend to, and we buy pots sometimes from nurseries and that, and they're purple or red, or and you might leave them in that for a while. Or you might even repot them back into it. And I have that. I have that issue where I have coloured plastic and it's not a good look.
Mm. I was just going to say, I believe that the Big Green Shed had started to ask that all pots were black from their suppliers.
Yeah, that would be good.
Which, yeah, but it's a shame because, you know, when you present a plant, if it's got pink flowers and it's in a pink pot, it looks really beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's more appealing to a buyer
to their eye.
A few little light pink flowers in a black pot. It just doesn't have the same pizzazz. So I don't think they should mess with the supplier's artistic flair for presenting their plants.
We're getting very deep, aren't we, talking about plastic pots. I personally like clear pots because I can see the roots.
I'm talking aroids. Yeah. I don't like clear pots.
I like to see what's going on. I can pick it up and have a look, twirl him around.
And do you then
and I can see the water going down.
Do you put it in something else?
Yeah, of course. To dress it up. Yeah, mostly. So I'm still getting there. And speaking of IKEA, I've got during the week another IKEA Millsbow cabinet.
Oh my goodness. So now I have
two, one on each side of the TV. It's not quite set up. I've got to do some sealing in there. So
that TV would be very distracting, wouldn't it? Like, wouldn't you rather sit there and watch your plants grow?
I think so. I do find that my eyes wander. Yeah. So I've got one cabinet with a lot of plants in it, and it's all experimental, and probably some plants do better in there than others. And I know there's always that element of experiment. And I pulled one out yesterday and thought, I don't think you're doing as well as you should. But you've got to be careful. You can't just throw things in and out. That's when you really do damage.
So what was it, Ray?
One was an alocasia. Yeah, Mello. And he just seemed to be, I think he was doing better before I put him in there. So, but I wanted to give it a try. So there's a little bit of experimenting going on, and I will probably mess up a few things in that process.
Well, you need to tell everyone what this Millsbow cabinet is.
Well, they're an upright metal cabinet with shelving, which you can do anything you like internally. They get set up, you set them up yourselves with grow lights internally. It does require drilling a hole in a corner so your cords have somewhere to go. Set them up with a fan in there as well for airflow, and a hygrometer in there, and so that you can obviously keep up on the humidity, and also you need to be able to see the temperature. You can have different types of shelving in there depending on the look that you're going for. You could have no shelves in there. At the one that I've got yesterday actually has some mesh that has been added into the back of it, so I can hang plants on the back of the wall of this cabinet. They're very small, they're narrow and they're tall. They're not a big cabinet at all.
So if you're hanging pots, like is there, you then need a special pot, or you need
a bracket,
so you can get the brackets as well.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
So it's not just the cabinet, it's the light, the hygrometer, the fan, the shelves,
and
the
brackets. Have to seal the cabinet because you don't want air escaping. Yeah, because if the air escapes, you're not going to get the humidity buildup that you want.
So the caulking gun with the plastic.
Yeah, or you can get stuff from, you know, the Green Shed or wherever. You can, like most things, you can YouTube it and find.
Have you put up a YouTube video?
No, I haven't, but I watch YouTube to see how they do it. Yeah, you can find anything on YouTube. And I watch little classes. I made my other half sit there and watch about putting one together.
Well, that TV the cabinets, Don, sit here, his popcorn.
And learn. I think he would rather stuck pins in his eyes than learn how to put one together, hence buying it already set up. So it's secondhand, but only like 2-3 months old. So that's pretty handy. So if they're not old, they're ready to go pretty much. Most of the work and the pain is done. We like that.
Oh, I've just got this picture of you saying, oh, we're having a movie night, Dale.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually have said to him, I will show you. We will pull up something and we'll learn how to do the ceiling. Yeah, because he's handyman. I mean, I'm not a handyman either, but it eludes us. Yeah, those types of... I'm not industrious enough. Perhaps I don't want to be. But we digress. We shall get back to
gardening. Well, folks, I think this is something you could all do on your next long weekend. You know, Easter's coming up.
It's pretty cost effective. And I think if you've got indoor plants, and like us, we collect tropical indoor plants, we're in the wrong country, you know, or the wrong state where we live. I mean, you can certainly have tropical, you know, up in the north of Australia, obviously. But we have to simulate the conditions for the plants to grow in, and therefore, and I've actually put in, and it's not always just for your best plants, I've put in plants that haven't been doing well and I can see new growth, and it's very good for propagating, and it's very good for, you know, say you just sort of tip cup something and you want to grow some roots and pop him in there, and they just seem to do better.
Wow.
So I'm seeing that change just on a few things.
So you bought an aerator recently.
No, Bev did that.
Oh, Bev did. I know she was telling me last week about how long her roots had grown. So I didn't quite get an update this morning, but...
Really? So it's working. She's nodding her head. So we better share with the listeners, it's an aerator. It's a gadget that you put into the water when you're propagating and you want roots to grow on your cutting by adding this aerator in, because we need oxygen in the water, and that's clearly working. And that, again, we try these little things amongst ourselves, don't we?
Nikki has been great.
Nikki from, yeah, Green.
Gold Leaf Greenhouse.
Thank you, Gold Leaf Greenhouse. Yeah, she's been giving us a lot of advice.
Yeah, and great easy tips to help gardeners or, you know, indoor plant growers get more from their plants.
Yeah.
So her last tip was to get this aerator, which is small. They cost around $10. You can get them from aquarium stores. Yeah. They have an air stone. You can get ones that run on battery and battery backup but plugged into the power. So if the power goes off, they continue running air on the battery backup. And just that air in the water adding oxygen encourages root growth.
Yeah.
Coupled with the fact one of other Nikki's other tips was...
Hydrogen peroxide.
Yes. Mm. A couple of drops in water to... keep the bacteria at bay.
That's
and, of course, that has oxygen in it too.
As well. So that's another tip. Mm. So, yeah, no, we must get Nikki back on.
Oh, I've just looked at the time.
I know.
But that was going to be my segue to growing pothos.
Okay. That's on the other side of this.
The music you remember. Curtain Radio.
And this is Let's Talk Gardening with Faye and Ray. We do have some clear lines for you, but we also have David Anderson online. He's the garden owner of Tropical Hideaway. This garden will be open next weekend, Saturday and Sunday between 10 and 4. It's located in Winthrop. Let's hear what you can look forward to seeing. Hi, how are you going, David?
I am very well.
Thank you for joining us. Are you busy?
My pleasure.
Is this the first time you've opened a garden?
Pardon?
Is this the first time you've opened a garden?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's a bit nerve-wracking, isn't it?
Now, is that birds that I hear in the background, David?
Lots of birds around, yes.
So you're sitting on the patio calmly looking out over your garden, or are you panicked with all that you have to do in the next week?
No, I don't have a lot to do. It's all been done.
Fantastic.
So in my garden, enjoying it. And it's a lovely morning.
It's a lovely morning to be sitting in it. Okay, what can our listeners expect to see in your garden, David, should they come along next weekend? Can you describe it?
Well, which is unusual for Perth. First, you have to create a lot of shade, protect it from our harsh sun here.
Yeah.
You have to throw a bit of extra water, which I know some people not happy with. But again, you have to try and keep humidity levels up.
Yeah.
And there's lots of unusual plants in here to see. things, well, lots of frangipanis in particular. Now, I got some lovely frangipanis from Queensland. They are one of the Sacred Garden frangipanis, which are one of the few nurseries that will ship product to Perth because of all the restrictions.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I have one in particular called Saint-Germain, which is still fairly young, but it's a beautiful landscaping variety. It's evergreen as well, but with long, thin leaves, hangs beautifully. So that's something I'm looking forward to growing into something larger. It's a medium-sized tree, not huge.
Mm.
And then I have something from the Caribbean, a sea grape.
Sea grape?
Which a sea grape. It grows on the beaches of the Caribbean. It's a native.
Wow.
And that is doing... And a friend, an Australian friend, found some in Broome and thought I would be interested in them and brought some down to Perth.
Yeah.
And it does extremely well in this climate.
Wow, how interesting.
I have to Google that. Yes, yes, see what it looks like.
It's a very, very lovely plant.
Okay.
And is it edible?
The fruit is edible, yes.
Oh, very interesting. All right, we'll get John to look that up for us and we'll find out a little bit more. So, David, I understand this is your garden is like an indoor out of the house, and the garden wraps around the house with different rooms and vistas. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, there's a big room in the back and then there's a smaller room in the front. The house, we've renovated it to open it up, so that the kitchen opens straight into the patio, the living room opens straight into the patio, and there's a counter, kitchen counter, comes straight out into the patio, and the windows just slide across. Likewise, the living room just opens right up. So we let the flies in. We're trying to make it more Caribbean style.
Yeah.
So we have a dining room and a sitting room outside, and the garden wrapped around.
Wow, that sounds absolutely divine, actually, David. What was your inspiration for creating the garden that you have?
Well,
where are you originally from?
I'm from Trinidad.
Aha. Uh-huh.
In the Southern Caribbean.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I only came here at the age of 40.
Yeah, that's late. Yeah.
I've been gardening since I'm a teenager. So that's what I grew up with, and that's what the plants I love. I think the tropical plants are the prettiest out there.
They're certainly the lushest, aren't they? Yeah. No, we're talking tropical today. Daniel Vereschetti is coming into the studio from Coast Road Palms, and so we are having a tropical morning, so it's entirely apt.
Yes?
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay, not a problem. Now, your address, David, 3 Dakin or Dakin? How do we pronounce the...
Dakin Glade.
Dakin Glade, D-A-K-I-N. 3 Dakin, yes. Glade in Winthrop.
Winthrop.
And you have a special charity that I read you'd like to donate to as well.
Yes, that is the Brain Cancer Society.
Yeah, okay. So what that means, listeners, is when you actually go to an open garden, there's a small entry fee, and part of those dollars actually do go to your chosen charity. And so it's a wonderful concept all the way around. And obviously there'll be a nice morning, afternoon tea opportunity for people too. They can sit in your garden and just simply enjoy it like you do.
Yes. We're trying to sell some food, which all the proceeds from the food sales are going to the Brain Cancer Society.
Great.
Trying to have a Caribbean theme on the food.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Yeah, that would be very interesting as well. All right. Look, thank you very much for joining us, David. It's kicking off Open Gardens WA for the year. It's the first garden event with regard to the remainder of the year, and it's nice to have one in March. Is it that a good time for you? How did you manage to get through February? What sort of impact did the weather have on your tropical garden, or did it thrive?
Oh, look, it was hard.
Mm. Yeah, it was hard. Okay, I thought it might have been a bit easier being a tropical garden, but you've told me otherwise.
It's the lack of humidity is the real killer, I think, when the heat is on.
Yeah.
But in the Caribbean, certainly in Trinidad, it doesn't get as hot as it does here.
Yeah. Yes, understood. All right, David, we shall let you get back onto your weekend. Enjoy your garden, and I hope we certainly encourage thousands of people to get along to your garden, beautiful garden, Tropical Hideaway, next weekend.
Thank you.
And on that note, the birds have had their say. You take care.
Happy gardening, David.
Thank you.
Enjoy next weekend.
Cheers.
It's a good tip, isn't it? He talked about the trees and creating the canopy, and that's what we need to do in all of our gardens. Doesn't matter if it's tropical or something else, but certainly with a tropical garden, you create the canopy and then you can add layers underneath lots of different things.
And that's what John Benesavage, he's the fern guru, tropical plant guru, and that's exactly what he's done in his magnificent garden.
Well, and he's now going back to areas that he hasn't touched and revamping them, so there's more changes coming. Now, I just wanted to say, with David's open garden next weekend, there are plants for sale, but it is cash only. So it is a small garden, but from what we've just heard from David, lots of inspiration
and
garden design
and style.
Unique
plants that we're not necessarily used to seeing.
I know. Mm. That's very different.
Yeah.
So that's a real key, isn't it?
Yeah, very. I always like to see something new or something that we don't know about, something
not
we haven't
big,
considered,
but
new.
But it's perfect, really, isn't it? Mm. Because we know that plot sizes are getting smaller, so this will give people inspiration.
And for what they can do in their own garden, if that's their style, the tropical look. Yeah, which
I'm sorry that we're going to miss it.
Yes, I am too. That's what I was thinking when he was talking. Mm. Absolutely. All right, we're in Maddington. Judith, good morning.
Good morning. I've got a question on dahlias. I've got roses and I have dahlias, and both have chili thrips. And the dahlias have got it really badly. Now, when the dahlias die down and I dig them, will they have chili thrip next year, or should I just dispose of the dahlias?
Well, you can do your best, Judith, to remove all the soil off the plants and perhaps dust them in sulphur. You could even treat them perhaps as they're dying down. You could consider treating the area.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard to know. Part of the cycle, they do develop in the soil. So removing the soil and any of the leaves, obviously that dies down. I think dusting them in sulfur, and there are other products available that you could treat the bulbs with and leave them dry. I wonder what else you could package them with over the dormant part of the cycle. Maybe getting some clean sand to put them in. That might help as well.
How many bulbs do you have, Judith?
Oh, I've got about 10.
Okay.
And they're beautiful, beautiful ones.
Really nice ones. Beautiful. How do you identify chili thrip on dahlias?
Well, they're not flowering like they should for a start, and they've just got, when the flowers come, they just do like the roses do. There's just
distorted.
Just distorted. Exactly, that's the only way to describe it.
It's not heat related like the heat that we've been through.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No. I have got some that are heat related, so no, I don't know.
You know the difference, yeah.
The other thing I'd probably suggest, Judith, rather than grow them in the ground, next year, grow them in large pots so that you're starting with fresh mix and you're not continuing that cycle.
Yeah.
That way you can move them round. And,
Sorry?
All right. I have got a couple in pots and they are okay.
Wow, that's interesting.
So that probably answers your answer there.
I think it's a really good suggestion of Faye's. I mean, dahlias have been spectacular this last season, haven't they? They've really...
I have. They've been beautiful. Yeah. I have had some beautiful... Before the chili strip arrived.
Oh, look, I'm on the chili thrip warpath at the moment, Judith, so I totally get it. Yeah.
Thank you, lady.
All right. Good luck. Yes.
Yeah. Well done noting the differences. I think that's what we have to do. We need to observe and assess what is working and what is not and why and question. Across the board, there are so many factors that can affect this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, far too many. But I think the advice you've given is spot on. All right, Judith, thank you. Take care. Cheers.
Bye.
Yeah. And Sue rang in. She would like the open garden times and details. Now, it's open, Sue, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. next Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., 23rd and 24th of March. The address is 3 Dakin Glade. Dakin is spelled D-A-K-I-N, Dakin Glade in Winthrop. So that's quite central for everybody too, I would imagine. So 10 to 4 each day.
Now, Helen has sent us in photos of devil's ivy or pothos that is growing as cuttings in water. And she's having trouble propagating them from water to a soil mix and one wondered what the problem is. I've given this a bit of thought, Helen, and I think probably one of the issues is that they've sat in the water for too long. Mm. When you're growing in water, once the roots develop and once they're about 2 inches long, that is probably the best time to put them into a soil mix. As the plant's roots sit in water for longer, particularly if the water's not changed, they can brown off and start to rot. Bacteria gets in, which is why a couple of drops of hydrogen peroxide helps.
Excellent.
And as we talked about earlier, even an aerator. So getting them into soil sooner rather than later. And also there's a lot of growth on these plants. So when you're taking cuttings, you really only want a couple of leaves and one or two nodes go in.
Yeah,
that's how you do a cutting.
Not
if
long
you've
pieces.
Got lots of leaves, the roots can't support it, so it's going to give up somewhere and it's probably going to be the roots.
So lots of shorter, smaller cuttings. Mm. Yeah,
yep.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So with those, because the roots are along on, what do you think the outcome will be?
I would cut them up into smaller cuttings and, you know, these are a plant that grow very
well. They're tough, right?
So what you do is make lots of little plants, multi-plant a pot.
Which I
break it down smaller, cluster them up, you'll have a better looking pot.
Bushier.
But the other thing is you can actually put a pot next to your main pot, pop the root in, anchor it down with a, you know, like a big hairpin.
Yeah, I use
or
bobby pins.
Piece of coat hanger cut
into
a U-shape, poke that down, and you can actually get it layering, and then once the roots have developed in the pot, you can cut it off the main plant.
Yeah.
Now is a brilliant time for propagating.
Doing stuff. Okay, beautiful.
Tempting not to, and of course, the way these aroids grow, Ray, they're going nuts at the moment, and so are the Hoyas.
Yeah.
So I've got a new burst of flowers on the Hoyas.
That's amazing.
And it's time. I'm going to have to start cutting them back. They're just like going everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
overruling the world.
Just a little bit. It's wonderful, but
it is.
I don't know that I need to propagate any more under current conditions. Yeah. It's just getting a bit too much. Susan in Safety Bay has sent us in a photo of some bugs and also thanks us for the wonderful information that is shared by us and our guest speakers. So thank you. On her blackberry, she has found some insects, and these are nymphs or early stages of the eucalyptus shield bug, also known as stink bug, because if they're disturbed, they'll give off a foul odour to warn off predators. The adults get to about 25 millimetres in size, and you'll often find them running up and down a gum tree trunk. And the smaller insects, the young ones, will hide under loose bark. It's nothing to worry about. They don't cause a lot of damage, and I wouldn't worry. That's not one of the the vegetable pest species.
And weren't you saying, if I'm correct, that there has been discovered a predator for this guy, or am I?
Yes, the feather-legged hoverfly, not for this one,
okay,
but the Virada nazira or something along those lines, the green vegetable bug, which can be a pest of your tomatoes.
So this is like
my key take home is having a garden that provides opportunity for lots of beneficial insects to come in. The lacewings are a predator, or the lacewing larvae are a predator of chili thrips. One of the known ones. So if you've got a garden with flowers, you know, on the peripheral, then you've got these beneficial insects already there. So your pests don't get out of control and build up in numbers. You've got an army there that will help out.
But you've got to bring them in by planting the appropriate.
You just have to bring flowers. You can't be too fussy. Avoid the use of insecticides. Leave some things past what you would consider is their use-by date. So if you've got a vegetable garden and you're growing parsley, leave some to go to flower. They set seeds. The seed drops, you get more plants. It's better than weeds popping up. You've got parsley popping up. Carrots will do the same thing, and they're so pretty. The ornamental comparison would be Queen Anne's lace. Anything that has that umbel flower, so dill and fennel, other great examples, and they look fantastic at the back of a garden. They wouldn't look out of place in your rose garden. You've got these towers of umbel or umbrella shaped flowers. They act as great landing pads for beneficial insects, flies, friendly wasps, butterflies, etc. And then, of course, you'll get the birds as well.
As well. Okay, we shall return. And Daniel Verischetti, I think, hopefully, will be joining us in the studio. I haven't spied him. I'm sure he's out there somewhere. Curtain Radio. And we are back. And, yes, we do have Daniel Verischetti in the studio with us from Coast Road Palms. Thank you for trekking in.
No worries at all. Good morning, Ray. Good morning,
folks. And you seemed quite happy when you said made it.
Well, we got in here again, didn't we? So it's good. It's always good.
What's happening at Coast Road Palms? How's things going? How did you guys, because, you know, you're a tropical nursery, how did you get through February?
Surprisingly, a lot better than what I thought we would. I was very panicking in the build-up.
You've got a lot of canopy there.
Yeah, there's a lot of canopy, but it's still quite open, especially on the outer edges. So, and all we've got a whole back area that's got no canopy on it at all. So we were a bit freaking out a bit, but it was no dramas at all, really.
Really?
Bit of extra watering.
Yeah.
Like manual watering, just to keep on top of where the overlap quite isn't there with the growth and a lot of stuff. But other than that.
Did you have to move a lot of plants like we do?
No, I didn't move a single thing.
No, tropical plants, they don't mind the heat, do they? As long as they get their water?
Yeah, as long as they get their water and they're used to the conditions. The biggest hurdle is just getting used to those conditions in the first place. Once they're there, then they're good. You got to remember as well, we don't go sticking them out as a sore thumb against a colour bond fence, against pavement. So they're all together. So even with a lot of the heliconians that are in midday sun, they're fine. But as long as they're all together, they're fine.
Got their own little microclimate going on.
And obviously once you get the plant at home, it grows bigger, it builds the same climate up again. But until then, you've got to go through all the transition.
Location.
It's all about location and maybe just putting up with a bit of burning and a bit of, you know, hoo-ha, and just waiting for them to come around and back around again. But the location has to be right
to begin with.
So today we're talking about heliconias. And tell our listeners what they are, well, Daniel, or why you love them.
Well, heliconias are your staple plant, I guess, of like barley. I guess that's probably the best way of doing it. So when you've been laying in that pool in barley, that's the plant you're staring at the whole time pretty much. And everywhere you look, they'll be there. Barley, you know, see them in cans, it's another spot, broom. You see slightly different variants in broom to cans to barley, but they're all at the end, they're all heliconians.
In barley, they're probably out in the open, but here, under a canopy.
He has a canopy plant for sure. There's no point trying to push it too hard. You can still have them quite exposed, but you do have to co-plant other plants to build the canopy up. So they can be used. If you're lucky enough to have that backyard, it's on the right angle, And we do have a lot of customers that do get away with it. You can get away with it, but there's a lot of luck involved. You just hope the fences run the right way. But with the use of Colourbond just becoming such the norm now, it's really starting to cause a lot of dramas, and plastic grass doesn't help with them as well. Right. So a lot of people get them because they're trying to use less mess, but then they'll have plastic grass, which is just more heat.
Defeats the purpose.
So one of their common names is crab's claw?
Yeah, most people know the common, more common terms, crab claws, parrot beaks, all those sorts of varieties.
So they'll grow up like a ginger, and then the flowers will either go upright or hang down?
There's all different sorts. So you'll get ones that will hang down, so like Rostrata, which is parrot's beak. There's many others, of course. Then you get things like Hot Rare Nights. They're an upright one. And then you get ones like Subulata, which will come right out the tip of the growth tip.
Some of them get very tall.
Yeah. So if you're talking Hot Rare and all that, so they're all like bi-high variants. So crossbreeds are bi-high. They all are 3 meter plus variants. Mm. So yeah, there are plenty that will grow shorter as well.
Yeah.
There's ones like Waxy Red and stuff that fly under the radar, which are really good varieties.
So there's a lot of options for gardeners. Yeah,
we've got the heights all going on.
Okay, that's good. That's
are good they good in pots?
Yeah, a lot of people do just have like one in the patio. Gorgeous. Getting it to flower sometimes in that scenario is difficult. But
why is that?
The sheer size of a lot of them is 3 metres, so you're not going to really want a 3 metre heliconia. So what you really want to do is on your patio is have a shorter growing one, then you have more chance of getting the flower because you'll be able to let it get it to its full potential.
And are the flowers long-lasting?
Yeah, months. Yeah.
That's just what we want.
Yeah. You'll get a month or so out of them, depending on the variety, you know, and depending on when you call it finished or not. But they will hang on there for a fair amount of time.
All right. I'd like to give something away. It's time to go shopping. $75 gift voucher up for grabs from Bigger Trees. You must be a Curtin FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. Now, we already know Bigger Trees are the Frangipani tree specialist. They are also an ornamental and fruit tree specialist nursery located in Pickering Brook. Huge amounts of magnificent stock arrive each week, and I see this week there's a lot of gardenia stock coming in. Camellias are in bud. Lots of new indoor plants to choose from. So we do suggest you browse their colourful Facebook page for updates and videos of the nursery. This week they've added in some gorgeous new pots too, I saw. And so from poinsettias to magnolias and everything in between, be it big or little plants, Bigger Tree do have your travel covered. And they also deliver across the metro area for your convenience. They're open Thursday through to Sunday. Go to biggertrees.com.au for details or give Kerry a call and she will assist you. Here is John's not so curly question today. Even I could knew the answer to this one. In 1966, singer Bob Lind sang about chasing what elusive creature across his dreams with nets of wonder. I shall repeat that. In 1966, singer Bob Lind sang about chasing what elusive creature across his dreams with nets of wonder. 94841927. And yes, we are actually here. We're just having a good chat off air as we do. You are tuned to Let's Talk Gardening with Faye and Ray and us. Special guest in the studio from Coast Road Palms, Daniel Veraschetti. Now, that was quick. We have a wither for the Bigger Trees $75 gift voucher, James in Caversham. Good on you, James. That voucher will be sent to you this week. The question was, in 1966, singer Bob Lynn sang about chasing what elusive creature across his dreams with the nets of wonder? Butterfly, of course, is the answer through the lyrics. The bright, elusive butterfly of love. An easy one for you today. Good on you, James. And we'll give away a voucher in the next hour from Green Life Soil Code. So stay tuned for that one as well. And let us know what you buy. We love to know. I'll let you carry on, Faye. I'll shut up now.
All right. All right. Well, John came in with some information about the sea grape. Lots of information here. It looks like it has a very large leaf. Daniel, have you ever seen anything like this?
Nah, not really.
Fruits in late summer, bears green fruit about 2 centimetres in diameter, large grape-like clusters, ripens to a purplish colour, and each contains a large pit that constitutes most of the volume of the fruit. So
it's very interesting.
Ornamental plant in South Florida. It serves as a dune stabilizer. So, yeah, great for coastal conditions. The wood has occasionally been used in furniture as firewood or for making charcoal. The fruits of the sea grape may be eaten raw, cooked into jellies and jams, or fermented into sea grape wine. So it sounds like a very useful plant.
Something different.
Mm, absolutely. And that can be seen in David's open garden next weekend.
Yeah, very pretty, right? I'm just holding up a picture to the guys off my phone. Yeah.
Looks like grapes.
Yeah. Big leaves.
We've also received an email from Jeannie, who's a regular listener and contributor to our show, and she sent in a photo of the artificial grapevine, Vitis vinifera. And now Jeannie lives in Beachborough. We also received an email from Lynn at Sorrento a couple of weeks ago, and her question was, can ornamental grapevines get chili thrips? I have a large established vine, and over the last few weeks I've noticed that the new growth appears deformed and very similar to the leaves on roses that have chili thrips. If it is thrip, how would you suggest I treat it, as it covers a large area? Well, you know, this is a problem that is widespread across Perth. Obviously, we've already had a call this morning about dahlias. We learnt in the early stages that there are many host plants for chili thrips. Now, there are treatment options available. As to whether they work or not, the jury is out. The thing is that some pests can become resistant to treatments used. So if you are using something, you need to alternate on a regular basis, probably weekly, different treatments. The thing is, unless you nuke everything in your garden, you're clearly not going to be able to get rid of it. I don't really know what or if there is an answer on treating this.
What are your thoughts, Daniel? Do you have chili thrip experience?
No, I haven't really had as much of a problem into the palm realm.
Yeah,
not anywhere where it's like caused me that much grief. So,
do you know of it, about it?
Yeah,
do you know people that have it?
It's not a common problem with what we do.
Okay,
so it's not. Yeah. Obviously, like the most similar thing to that, to put in context, is probably spider mites, I suppose.
Mm.
It's probably the most similar thing because it's the same thing. It breeds up big numbers, so if you start chemicaling, you need to rotate chemicals and all that. But like we run predatories for that sort of stuff.
Do you?
Yeah.
And you predatory insects.
So how do you do that?
So predatory insects. So what we do is we run Californicus through. So we do a monthly drop of Californicus.
What are they, Daniel?
So they're a predatory mite that eat your two-spotted mite and all your common mites that you get around Perth. So we just do predatory drops of that sort of stuff. And, yeah, we'll do it every 4 weeks. That's what I'm doing at the moment. And that will keep all the mites at bay.
Okay.
So if you do see any, it's be such a low amount that literally they'll get cleaned up a week or two later.
Does that target thrips as well, do you know?
I don't think so. Californicus, from what I understand, is just mites only.
Okay.
That's how I understand it. There could be other benefits to it as well. But, yeah, but the reason why we use Californicus is they will live on pollen in between mite outbreaks. So just even palm pollen and stuff is enough to keep them going.
Mm.
So we just obviously increase the numbers up because obviously even heat waves and that can affect their populations just like it can do to the bad mites. So we just to make sure they're distributed, I'll just do monthly drops. That even if I don't see anything, it's just precautionary drops.
Mm.
So I haven't seen anything this year so far, or just real minor. So just as you're just doing as a precautionary drop. If you've got outbreaks, then it is a mission to clean it up.
So predators of the chili thrips include lacewings.
Lacewings do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and most gardens would have lacewings around.
Yeah, we've got a lot.
So encouraging them to hang around there and breed, is there anything special you do to encourage them to breed
other
in your
than
garden?
Putting more in there. That's about the only thing. Like again, with the IPM, you can release a release of lacewings. They're available. So
exactly,
that's probably the easiest way to build their numbers up.
Think I'll do that.
But yeah. And having you've then got to have habitat for them.
Oh, they've got to have somewhere to live.
So to use any sort of insecticide is going to be counterproductive. Mm.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to work all together. So especially pirate bugs are another predator. Yeah. Lacewings everywhere, and they will come. So having flowers that we know that lacewings will hang around in, white alyssum is certainly one. And most flowering plants, like they'll be around your vegetable gardens, but not using insecticides is the key.
Especially systemic ones, I find, because that's what really stuffs it up. Like if you're going to do it, if you really have to do it and you're trying to do it, then you're better off using a contact, really, just a short-lived, but you really don't want to be doing it. That's the reality of it. That's my theory on it.
You sort of have to make that decision about which way you're going to tackle it and be prepared if you're going to go integrated pest management track, that it might take time. I mean, the lacewings are flying around every night. You only have to put a light on and you'll have lacewings come to your garden.
Yeah.
Easy as that.
Yeah.
But you want them to hang around. You want them to lay their eggs.
Yeah.
And then there's got to be food for them. So they will then also target aphids as well.
Yeah. Mm. You know, and back to the mite topic, a lot of people don't realise this, but like using things like Comfidor is really bad because it makes mites lay eggs.
I don't think you could use Comfidor anymore.
It's still around.
Okay. They branded it under a different name, right?
There's all different names of it now. Mm. It's still around. But the thing is, just because it's got a different brand name, it's still the same thing. But because it's been systemic, mites will lay up eggs after contact with it. And that's when you get resistant to it.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. It is past 9 o'clock. Here's the news. Sunny today with a maximum of 34. Right now we're sitting on 26 degrees Celsius and the humidity at 61%. Overnight the minimum will drop down to 20, which is pretty warm, and a maximum tomorrow of 29. It will be sunny. Looking ahead to Monday, mostly sunny with a maximum of 31. And just glancing at the rest of the week, we're sitting on 29s and 31. So we're sort of hovering around that temperature for the time being. John prepared me a little, he likes to prepare me a little grid, if you like, of rainfall. We had 1.6 mils in March, but from the 1st of October of last year, we have a total of 21.8 mils of rain only, which is devastating. Okay, carry on.
Right, where were we up to? We were talking about resistance of chemicals and products. We mentioned that Comfidor is no longer available, but it has been rebranded. The active constituent is actually imidacloprid, but that is now branded under other names. It's a systemic insecticide.
Yeah.
So anything that targets, eats sap, chews on the plant will be affected and can die.
Yeah. That's what it is essentially. So it's a product that will show you results, but it also has problems as well. So
it's used a lot for things like mealybug and...
Yeah, it's used a lot for soft pests, so mealybugs, soft scales, that sort of stuff. Mm. But the thing is, like I was saying before with the mites and that, they really respond very differently to it. So we'll knock them off, but they'll breed up at an astronomical rate straight away afterwards because they'll keep feeding on it. And what I understand, normally they've got enough time to lay eggs before it knocks them off. So that's the downside of it. That's one of the downfalls I've noticed with it, that's for sure.
So if they're laying eggs after they've been affected by it, the next generation is then resistant?
You get more resistance. Yeah, well, it's just a numbers game, isn't it? Anything that produces heavy numbers, like even these thrips and stuff, it's big, big numbers. It's a bit like the human population. You have resistance to all sorts of stuff, even people still haven't got COVID and stuff. It's the same story, I guess, with this. It's the same thing. Mm. It's a numbers game. And obviously, it's the same thing. If all them are the only ones surviving, they're the ones that are breeding and they're the ones that are... Whereas it takes us generations, it takes them days. And that's the...
Difference.
That's the difference. Yeah, we're talking days and weeks, not 50 years.
Yeah, got you.
Okay,
we do have free lines, 94841927. Daniel Verischetti in the studio with us from Coast Road Palms. All right, now I think you've got a couple of emails
I do have a couple of emails. This came in from Evelyn, and she's got a small patch of garden in the corner of her property. It's bounded by two brick walls in a corner. It's got a lovely water feature, and then it's bordered by bricks and a nice grassed area, and she's looking for suggestions on what to plant there. So I think the the first thing is, what style of garden is it already and what style of house is it? What I would aim to do is think about what type of garden I wanted to create and match it to the watering conditions. So, for example, if it's reticulated and you can only water 2 days a week, then you choose plants appropriate to that, unless you want more maintenance, basically. My aim would be to cover the brick walls so that you actually look like the garden goes beyond. So if there's anything behind, if there's trees, you can make that look like a borrowed landscape. And by screening the brick wall and not being able to see it, it gives you a better look, but also you're reducing the heat effect that comes off that. So you could put a bamboo screen there to cover it and reduce the heat. But I'd also like to see some trees, and I was thinking that'd be a lovely spot for native things like gums and the native daisies and kangaroo paws. You could get a lot of colour in that spot. But you could also go to that open garden next weekend and get an idea of tropical plants to go in there. And I'm sure that's what Daniel would be thinking, roeo and little rubies and red foliage and heliconias.
Yeah. I do love my red foliage.
Yeah, definitely a little ruby, and that will blend with, because we can obviously see the picture in front of us, would help to blend it over. Then you could morph it a little bit, you know. There's all different ways of doing things.
What canopy would you put there to give some shade?
Well, it's because of the style of garden, it's already there. It's a bit tricky because you don't want to just change it. It looks like the borrowed plants are palms from next door and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Add some tall growing palms, yeah, frangipani.
Yeah, frangipani would probably blend more into that style that's right there. That's probably what you would use because it would morph it over. So, yeah.
Hibiscus.
Yeah, hibiscus is another easy one as well.
And, of course, there's some beautiful hibiscus that have got the reddish-pink foliage,
yep,
or green and white, so variegated foliage.
Pretty.
I think, Evelyn, you've just got to decide on what style of garden you want and then go from there. Yep. And go to the nurseries and open gardens for inspiration.
And I was just thinking, too, while you're talking, Friends of Kings Park, I think they have a big sale open day tomorrow up at Kings Park. Lots going on up there, you know, go and get in early for the native selection. So
people often get there the night before, Ray. Yeah, or 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's, you know, sort of crazy.
For the special things.
For the special things. That's the crazy stuff I would do. Yeah, yeah. So but that would be a very good vent if you're looking for natives at the moment too.
And with that email was also one of the hibiscuses that has got marks on the leaves, but I can't see any evidence of pests. It looks like the plant was pruned, and I just wonder if perhaps when the branches were pruned and dropped, it's damaged the leaves because they look old, and it's almost a bit like hail damage where the leaves have been had abrasions caused to them, but that wouldn't have happened for quite a while now.
I haven't had any hail for a little while now. That's what comes next normally.
All right, we're in Gosnells. Joan, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Actually, I've just been down watering my veggie patch, and I've got a curcumin Siam, and I've forgotten the other name of it.
Ah, probably Siam Jewel.
Doing very well. Yes, yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've got one in a pot, and that's not doing terribly well either. I'm just wondering what conditions that they survive or thrive under.
Well, curcuma, Siam Jewel, they're technically related to, like, turmeric. So
That is a turmeric, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not turmeric if it's Siam, normally. If it's Siam Jewel, it'd be
it's
one of the
ordinary. It's a curcumin.
Sorry?
It's a curcumin.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a curcumin.
So yeah, it's in the family. So they're more grown ornamental, those ones. So they've got broader leaves and stuff like that, and they're more grown for the flower. They are a deciduous plant, and they do like a little bit of sun, but not too much. But this time of year, it's not unlike turmeric to start to brown on the edges at this point in the year anyway, because they are just doing their cycle.
So What is that?
They're not very big.
Nah, they'd still be small. It's all about the timing and stuff like that. Those siams don't really produce, don't really grow that well in Perth. Most of the ones that do come out will come out of the glass houses nursery, so they get a jump on the season. So if you're drying it outside, it can take a bit of time to get them up and going. So yeah, as it gets older, the bigger the root system, the quicker it'll get going in the seasons. But yeah.
So what is the trigger for them to die down or go dormant?
Just cold. Yeah, the moment it starts to cool down, they'll go dormant.
Well, they haven't at the moment. Nah, that's okay, at the moment, but they're just not. They're just not growing. They're only, you know, a hand width or higher, you know, in the leaf, and that's it. They're not thriving.
Yeah, the Siam jewels and them are dwarf type ones anyway. They're not big cucumbers.
Are they in a pot or in the ground, Joan?
Well, one's in the pot, yeah, and that's in the a shaded area. And the other one's in the ground that gets a bit of sun in the middle of the day. That's the problem.
Yeah, so that with what you've got to do is, when it comes to springtime, well, what we do with all those sorts of plants, you just got to feed them heavy just as they're coming up. So the moment they're starting to pop up, you've got to get a good control-release fertilizer on that will give them a steady feed. That makes a huge difference. Okay. So obviously it depends on mix as well. Because they are deciduous, if your potty mix is made up of garden soil and not good draining, they really do suffer. So what you can probably find is over the winter time, you might be losing half your plant to root rot or anything like that, and you may be getting lucky that there's enough left for it to go again, but it's not really gaining anything every year. So the most important thing is drainage on them. So if it's just coming back weaker and weaker every year, you eventually will lose it, and that's why the size probably isn't getting there. So it's all about drainage. If that pot's not draining right now, the job you would have right now is to dust it off and put new potting mix in, get a feed on and try and make the most of the last little bit of heat we've got before it goes down.
And the actual one in the garden would get full drainage.
Yeah. So just keep an eye on it. Just make sure that it's not waterlogging through the winter month, and that's it. But just make sure you feed it like next spring when it comes up. Just feed it really heavy and get it bigger. The bigger they get, the easier they are. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How
big should they get?
They're a tricky one, though. If it's actually is a siam, then they are tricky. So they are, yeah.
Foot high?
Sorry?
Maybe a foot high?
Yeah, that's about it. They don't get much bigger. And then by now, they should be flowering. So if they're all really happy, they should have done their flowering and they should have done everything. So, yeah.
Not happy, Jan.
Nah, just feed. Keep it fed. That's the main thing. So as soon as spring comes, you have to really get the food on them. Like they are hungry at that time of year.
Okay.
Like work on them through the growing months.
Yeah, and then ignore them in winter, obviously, because they're not there.
But the one in the ground, is that going to be all right through the winter if it gets cold and wet?
Yeah, if it's big enough, it should be fine. You just don't want the soil to be soggy. Because remember, they do live in the top.
It doesn't get soggy.
Yeah, that's the main thing, because it does live in the topsoil. So if you're someone who's got heavy, heavy mulching and stuff, well, it'll get soggy up the top. So that can cause some grief. But if it's draining and open, it should be fine. And the other thing too is if you've got heavy mulch around it, be wary of that when it's coming up because, you know, slaters and those sorts of animals love to eat that just as it's coming up. So, you know, again, you fall behind.
What love to eat it?
Slaters or anything like that lives in your mulch layer will start to take that sort of stuff out. And then you might see it a month later when it finally gets enough warmth to go, but you might have already lost a big heap of growth. Yeah.
Yeah, but they haven't had any attack on anything. It's just they're not doing very well.
Yeah, get the slow release food onto it ASAP when the springs. Might be start seeing any life, just make sure you put like a proper control release on it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Shall do.
Yeah, no worries.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joan. 94841927. Thank you for answering that, Daniel.
No worries at all.
Okay. Now, Faye, you've got something extra there?
Couple more emails. Yep. We did receive an email from Nissa last weekend. She sent in a photo of a hedge that had been grown with midgeon berries, and it looks really good. She's got the beautiful native garden up in the hills, and she was looking for a plant, recommendations from Mark, tucker bush plants to go in a dragon pot, and he suggested a desert lime. And when he did that, I said, well, can you suggest a spiller, filler and thriller along with the theme? And he recommended mints, river mint, wild mint and bush mint for the base of the pot.
Okay.
Very good. That sounds quite lovely, doesn't it?
It does.
An edible pot of tucker bush plants.
Mm.
And what else have we got? Now, I've sent this one through the My Pest Guide Reporter app, and it's Leanne of Wanneroo. So she's got some dwarf citrus leaves here, and they're showing signs of, like, it looks like circles have been stamped into the leaf.
Yeah, I saw that one.
I've not noticed anything like that before. I think it's probably the way the plant has grown, like a puckering in the leaf. It's quite interesting. Anyway, I've sent it through to My Pest Guide Reporter app to see, you know, if they can suggest anything.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
Rather than pest, I think maybe it might be something, maybe nutrient.
It probably is. It's a really odd thing to call a pest on that, isn't it?
Mm. It's like the veins have kind of shrunken in and gathered, a bit like seersucker.
Because it's literally bridging up to all its veins as well, almost. I don't know. It's weird.
Mm. Interesting.
Yes.
So we will wait and see. And we have John's just, or Bev's just actually come in. There is another open garden. It's not with Open Gardens WA, more of a private opening, La Sparta Lane Open Garden. So it's in Canning Vale.
Rings a bell.
We have had it before. Mm. It's the garden of artist Jude Scott. We've been to it. A beautiful garden. Very large for a suburban block, and it is put on by the National Seniors Perth branch. So there's a couple of buses going. There's more details here. It supports the Kids Cancer Support at the Children's Hospital. The departure is from George Burnett Leisure Centre in Manning Road, Carrawarra, 9:45 and returning at 2:00. A number of places will be limited by bus capacity to 22. The garden itself is 507 Nicholson Road, Canning Vale. You order and pay for your own lunch and drinks. Average cost $22.50. There's a menu choice. So for more details, you need to contact the National Seniors Perth branch, and there's a number here you need to get your pens ready, 0413 129 0707. That's too many numbers, isn't it? All right, we'll come back with that.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right.
Now, are we up to date?
Do we have to have a break?
We do.
We better do that then.
Okay. Curtain Radio. 24 minutes after 9, you're with Ray and Faye and our special guest, Daniel Verischetti from Coast Road Palms. We'll get into the care of heliconias just shortly. You've got something else you want to add in, Faye, or are we?
Oh, yesterday, Rita, one of our regular listeners, messaged our Let's Talk Gardening Facebook page with photos of
it's a Kentia palm.
Kentia palm, and she found brown squiggly things on the back of the leaves.
Yeah.
And she sprayed it with Eco Bug Organic, which is a product I hadn't actually heard of before. I did some searching and came up with the fact that it's potassium soaps and it's organic certified. So if you do need to spray anything, that's probably one that, you know, I would suggest would be okay.
What is it?
It's Eco Bug Organic by Multicrop. Veggies, fruit and herbs. Yeah. So organic certified and safe for edible plants. But the palm itself had these little
Follicles
or
hair. Yeah. Yeah. She thought they were a bug, but it is natural on the back of Kentia palm leaves.
I don't see anything wrong with it, unless there's something finer on there we can't see in the images, but I'm pretty sure we're just talking about the hair, so I don't see anything actually wrong with it. The palm looks like it could probably do with a feed from what we can see of the palm, you know, a good feed in the pot and whatnot, but other than that, the leaf that is there is fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Explain a good feed. What do you like to do?
Good control release. Fertilizer, it's in a pot. Like, we're obviously going to push what we use. Obviously, we've got a palm-specific one.
Yeah.
But just make sure you're using a good quality one. You know, fertilizer coatings cost a lot of money. So if it's really cheap, it's probably not coated. That's probably what you got to remember.
Yeah.
So controlled release rather than something that adds...
You can give it a boost, but you're better off just having controlled release and make sure it's all just going nice and smoothly. The plant can uptake it. It's not dumping through the bottom of the pot into the waterways. That's what you want to be using, more control.
And it's not likely to burn the roots.
Yeah, don't want to burn the roots. And obviously some of the cheaper products, the coatings aren't as good. So you're going to get temperatures above 28 degrees, 30 degrees, which Perth loves to live in most of the year. Yeah. Most of the coats start to fail at those sorts of temperatures anyway. So you just got to keep all that in mind. So yeah, if it's a pot that's in a high heat exposure, well, probably some of the good coats will start to fail if it's 48 degrees. So
do you put them on the top or do you dip down and...
Put it
in the ground.
When our skies are potting, so when we're actively potting, it goes in.
Mm.
But obviously, once we're top dressing, it'll go on top. There's no quick way of top dressing if not. But obviously, by the time you're top dressing, normally your plant's a lot bigger and stuff, so it's insulated from the plant. It's obviously just not like a fresh rootstock piece or something with no cover. So it will hold up a lot better anyway.
Do you foliar spray? Do you do foliar?
I don't, no.
You don't do foliar?
No.
Okay. Do you use fish? On anything?
Just use the control release stuff. Yeah. You foliar at home and stuff, yeah. There's nothing wrong with doing it. We've got tons of customers that we use, you know, their foliar type spraying. The trick to it is make sure if you're doing it, you know what it is and you use it, you know, regularly and it works just fine.
Mm.
For us, a lot of nursery bull foliar, we just do granular. Mm. Try to keep it as similar to when you get at home as possible. But you can fertigate and stuff. But, yeah, we just use the controls. I think I'm quite happy with
it. It's easy, and I find as long as you give the garden a regular feed, probably at a basic level, I would do autumn and springtime, which is, for the most plants, the growing season.
Yeah.
And if I did nothing else, that would work and the garden looks healthy.
Yeah, for someone that's just growing the home suburban garden, it's not trying to, you know, power things along and, you know, get size to it like us. We're trying to obviously get a bit more productivity. But for someone at home, it's probably fine. I always say to people, once you can wake up in the morning, you don't really have your jumper on anymore, it's probably a good time to start fertilising. And then you can just wait till around Christmassy time sort of thing. Or just wait till now. Give another hit now.
Yeah, that was today.
But, yeah, pretty much, yeah. But yeah, but like I said, normally in the mornings where you don't feel you need that jumper on anymore, that's not going
to
say
that's what
you
do way first. To- ascertain or gauge it, isn't
well, for
it?
Tropicals, it's a good way to gauge it because that means they'll start waking up as well. It means the morning temperatures are up, so it's a good time to start feeding.
Mm.
It means it's start for us to get propagating.
I guess with cooler nights on the radar too, not watering at night time would probably be a good idea for tropicals.
Got to start rethinking everything now. So where you could go doing whatever the hell you wanted, as soon as these mornings keep getting a bit cool, I would probably write the next week or two, but it's going to turn. We won't know how Perth is. When it turns. And it'll catch you out.
Yeah.
And then we'll start running
out. Yeah, we go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, then we'll start seeing fungal problems and other weird bacterial things start popping up. Mm. But that's it.
All right, so getting back to heliconias, I think, we've got a time, just checking. What's the care, feeding, soil prep? What do people need to know if they'd like to go down that path?
Well, if you're going to put them in the ground, make sure you do enrich the soils up. You don't want them drying out through the warmer weather, that's for sure. As far as feeding goes, same thing as what we were just talking about then. Just make sure you feed them actively pretty good in the springtime. The trick to them is you've got to have them pretty healthy before the winter time so they sail through and then they'll be fine. The most important thing is like pruning. So once they've flowered, those stems are finished. So they do have to remove them. If you don't remove them, then the plant will look ratty all the time and you'll complain about that.
So
it's a bit like gingers as well. Once they flower, those stems have got to come out. It's the same principle between
the two.
Tidy them up, get rid of anything that's flowered and get it out. If it's been there for a few years and it's a younger plant and hasn't flowered yet, then you probably should cut those ones out as well because they'll start to go tattery after a few years as well. So, yeah. But they're more care, just when it's hot, just give them a drink and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, you can definitely open them up and ventilate them out and stuff. As we all know, pests like it when it's thick and dense.
Yeah.
So opening up canopies is a good thing to do. At the nursery, once winter time comes, we open that canopy right up to try and eliminate anything harboring in there. So our pruning schedule will start in a few weeks' time, and we'll be opening up get more light in again.
And in your nursery, is there anything new and exciting coming through? I always ask these questions and put everyone on the spot.
I know, then I've got to think, what do we got new coming out? There is new stuff coming out all the time. But we've got bat plants in this week. That's new this week.
I saw that.
New
Drop of Crotons. Faye likes them too.
Yeah, they're good. They are definitely more of an indoor plant for the winter time. They're not a rugged outdoor plant.
They're groovy, aren't they? Did you get one, Faye?
No, but my friend, who I share plants with, got a multi-planted pot. So that's a cool plant as well.
So yeah, just they're an indoor plant more than your patio. I've had them on my patio for years before. They're fine.
And they flower regularly?
Oh, like this time of year, you'll get flowers.
Because you know what you're doing.
If they're big enough, they will. Yeah. What else? Yeah, no, there's a few new heliconias that are about ready to come out, so they might even make an appearance soon. I'm not too sure yet. Just got to do number countings, just got to see what we're at.
Are you displaying any upcoming shows?
No, I've got nothing on.
Not the Perth Garden Festival? No, you're not going to be there?
No, not this year. Okay. I'm out for this year, so yeah. Just going to have a chill Mother's Day with my wife and the kids. So
nice.
We're just actively just cleaning up and stuff this year.
So no appearances at the Kalamunda Garden?
No, I've got nothing on at the moment. No. So for the moment this year, I'm just going to just do what we're
concentrate
doing.
Concentrate on
It's not
a bad thing to focus on home and doing what you do best.
100%, yeah. So, yeah, but like, yeah, mostly this year we're just focusing back on the nursery, just changing up a few things. Obviously, plant trends have shifted a little bit, so we're just going
Can you elaborate on that? Plant trends are shifting. What are people wanting? What are they buying at the moment?
I wish I knew what everyone wanted because it would answer a lot of questions. I think a lot of us nursery guys are in the same predicament, I think. I think we're all selling a lot of everything. Or bits of everything. I think that's how most of the nurseries are rolling at the moment. I don't think there's any real standout-y type plants at the moment, to be honest.
Tropical edibles?
They're still popular, but, you know, back to normal popularity. So there's still, like, all the gingers, obviously, and all that's still popular. Still got lots of edible gingers and turmerics and galangals and all that sort of stuff. That's all good. A lot of people still after shampoo-shaped ginger. A lot of people still looking for that. So do you know?
Remind us about that one.
That's the one where they squeeze the flower and all the stuff comes out. Then you can wash your hair with it. So if anyone's interested, you can Google that up. There's plenty of videos online of that thing.
That'd be a great plant to park by your outdoor shower, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it actually, but it does grow here as well. So that's the good news about it. Like it's a lot of people were like real skeptical of it, but we've been growing here for years. We had it in the trial plots for years, and then that video went viral. And like, okay, I said to Stan, we've got to get this thing
cranking
now. So we've got the numbers up. So that's out and available now. And if you don't want that one, we do have just the standard beehive gingers, which are probably a bit nicer.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, and they will flower and do all the gear. So that they're a good option as well. So probably more unusual than new because it's a lot, obviously we're doing our rotations.
So describe the beehive ginger.
So beehive gingers, so they give you like literally a flower that comes out of the ground that's shaped like a beehive, I guess that's the best way of describing it.
On a stem,
but it generates from the ground, so not from the top of the plant or anything like that. They will flower about now, or they're probably just finishing up now. Some of mine flowered earlier this year.
What colour are they?
You can get orange and what we currently have got, we've got the shampoo, we've got the orange, and we've got the yellow currently, but there are more colours, but that's what we've got on rotation at the moment. So every few years we try to... This is what the maintenance is involving, just shifting some varieties back through again. Because even like the cost of varieties of gingers, rather than doing all of them at once, we're just going to be doing bits and pieces.
I love the costus. For people who don't know, the flower head could be about 15 to 20 centimetres.
Yeah, that's Red Tower we're talking about.
Red Tower, that's a stunner. Red Tower.
Yeah, you can get up to 30 or so if you get them big enough. Yeah.
I'm sure you can, but in my unmaintained garden.
That's what you
but
normally
the
get.
The leaves spiral around the stem. They're long. You put your hand underneath.
It's got a furry back.
It's furry. And there is another one that's got reddish.
Yeah,
reddish colouring.
There's so many of them. There's so many. Even us in our trial plots, we've got so many of them, but we just release out so many at a time because there's only so many people looking for them. But there's so many with smaller flowers and all that. And, yeah, there are ones with purple backs on them and stuff like that, which we'll have them out in another few weeks in the bigger size. Probably should have been out this week, but we ran out of time, so probably say Easter.
The one I'm thinking of is Costus, C-O-S-T-U-S, if anyone wants to have it.
That's the family
I can highly recommend it. I've had the plant for years.
Yeah.
The more you give it love, feed and repotting, it's so easy to propagate
and
as well.
And if anyone's turned off by the red tower, the sheer size of it, there is Phoenix, which is its hybrid, which is the miniature form of it.
Go big or go home, I say.
Oh, yeah, I agree. They're a pretty cool plant. But a lot of people see our big ones in the garden there and they go, oh, that's way too big, which it probably is for most people. So, like I said, we do have Phoenix. So Phoenix does look exactly the same characteristics and anything. The flowers don't get as big and the flowers won't hang on for a whole year like the other one will. But you still get 3 to 4 months of flowering, which is pretty good in my books.
Mm.
And it's pretty... not many pests touch them, so you don't really have to worry about them too much. Yeah. Those fripp things seem to be leaving them alone, touch wood.
Mm.
So we'll just see what happens in the long term.
Another stunning one, of course, is the purple ginger, which is not a true ginger, but it's just a stunning feature plant.
Yeah, purple or blue ginger.
I was going to say, it's almost blue, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd call it purple, I reckon, but the common name for it is blue ginger. So, yeah, that's another easy one that a lot of people have got. Good old-fashioned one, pretty much, that's been around for a long, long time. But anyone who's growing blue ginger will grow these other costas just as easy, if not easier, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's so many other pink Indian heads, and you can just ramble them on heaps and heaps of them. But, there's a lot of them.
All right. 94841927. Don't miss your opportunity to chat with Faye and Daniel about anything going on in your garden. I think I will give away a Green Light soil voucher. One of John's curly questions coming up. You must be a Curtin Radio member not to have won a prize in the last 28 days to keep it fair. Now, you know Paul and Linda Michener. They like delivering a greener garden. That's their Green Life motto. And if you go to greenlifesoil.com.au, you can browse their free Perth gardening guides and downloadable resources. Something that took my eye this week was their Pure Blood and Bone Certified Organic. It contains rock dust, slow-release trace elements and beneficial microbes. Great for all plants, including natives. And you can find Green Life Soil Co. goodies in other reputable nurseries as well. If you can, we also recommend you browse their Facebook page for updates. Green Life Soil Co. do deliver across the metro area, and they also provide courtesy trailers should you like to be in the market for mulch and top dressings and all those good things. Here's your opportunity to win a $75 gift voucher. It's a true or false. There's a butterfly in Europe that spends most of its caterpillar and pupa stage living in an ant's nest. True or false? There's a butterfly in Europe that spends most of its caterpillar and pupa stage living in an ant's nest. Give Bev a call now on 94841927. Curtin Radio. Thank you for your company this morning. You're listening to Let's Talk Gardening on this lovely autumn day. Keep cool though, it is getting up to about 34, and in my books it's pretty warm. Okay, we're heading out to Port Kennedy. Now, Ruth is also the winner of the Green Life Soil Co. voucher, since she's obviously thrown in a question at the same time. Good on you, Ruth. How's it going?
Yeah, not bad. We're going to ring you when we heard the question. I thought, oh, yes, okay, we'll answer that as well.
Kill two birds, I say, yes.
Yeah. We've got two dragon fruits, our plants, and they both flower, but they both flower at different times. Now, I have heard that you meant to hand pollinate the dragon fruit. You can't pollinate with the same plant, can you?
Oh, Ruth, I don't think there's one right answer here, because it depends on the plant that you've got.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important for you to know the plants that you have, and then you can cross-reference if they are self-sterile or who their pollinating partner is.
Okay. Unfortunately, like my husband said, we got them from roadside picker.
Okay. If they do flower, you can take a photo of the flower and get it. It's possible that it could then be identified and then a match could be found.
Okay, rightio.
Now, Simon's Dragon Fruit is on Facebook, and he's got some great references there. He has probably now over 100 different types. Now, he would be my go-to to identify your plant and then work out, who you need as a partner.
So who was that again? Sorry?
Simon's Dragon Fruit.
Simon's Dragon Fruit.
S-I-M-O-N-S. Yeah, just search him on Facebook. He will pop up. And that's a wealth of information on that page.
Right, no worries. Okay.
And do you want to give us the quiz answer? I'll give the question again and I'll get you to give the answer, will you, Ruth?
True.
It's true. Okay, so the large blue butterflies. Actually, I'll give the question because then everyone can relate. True or false, there's a butterfly in Europe that spends most of its caterpillar and pupa stage living in an ant's nest. Sounds awful, doesn't it? But it's true. The large blue butterfly's larva is carnivorous and feeds on the ant larva.
It would have to, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it isn't attacked because it makes a sound like a queen ant in distress.
Oh.
So how did you know it was true, or was it a guess? No. I would have had to have guessed.
It was a guess, definitely.
Good on you.
I sort of thought, well, the larva would feed off the ants, so, and it sounds bizarre enough to be right.
Yeah, thank you to John Glidden. All right, well, a $75 gift voucher from Green Life Soil Co. will make its way to you this week. Thanks for playing with us, Ruth.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And I'll look up Simon's Dragon Fruit.
Yes. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you very much,
well done,
enjoy
Ruth.
Enjoy your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And we do have a blue butterfly here that has a relationship with the ants, and the ants will take them up the tree daily to feed and bring them back down to the nest at night and look after them.
Mm, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Do you
call that a symbiotic relationship?
You do.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of that going on.
I tell you what, if the community of people were more like ants, the world would be a better place.
Mm.
They're very kind to each other most of the time. They look after each other.
Yeah. I like that. Now, we do have free lines. I'm not sure what's going on this morning, guys. 94841927. And if you'd like to email us, gardening@curtainfm.com.au.
We have received an email from Mary, and she has a patch of ground where she previously grew a vegetable garden. She'd like to use raised wicking beds, but needs to prepare the surface or cover the soil in order to have a surface free of weeds, etc., and cover with wood chips. Would the best solution be to put a thick layer of cardboard and then some fabric, which would be the best, and then wood chips, thinking wood chips better than stones? We'll be listening on the radio for your advice. Love, love, love your program on a Saturday morning. So thank you, Mary. The base of a wicking bed needs to be free draining. Cardboard will break down and won't actually long term create any sort of barrier.
Mm.
It is important to put something like stones in the bottom, stones or expanded clay. You could use plastic water bottles, polystyrene, anything that won't break down, that allows for drainage. Now, if you want to keep roots out, probably the best thing is a geotextile fabric. And I don't know if Mary's got the actual wicking beds already or if she's building them up on her own. But there is a company that supplies and sells what is called water ups, and these are if you're retrofitting and creating your own wicking bed. They're a plastic vessel that lay flat, and they provide space to hold water in it. So you can add this into any sort of container to create your own wicking bed. Mm. And then you put down a fabric and then you build up your soil on top of that.
So there was an easy example of it on Gardening Australia last week. Costa did it.
Okay.
Just with a pot.
Yep.
And it was very easy to follow.
There is a supplier who was at Kalamunda Garden Festival a couple of weeks ago. So it is a subject I'd like to feature in the next few weeks.
And I think Green Life Soil Co. feature as well. They are very good in helping people set up wicking beds and examples
they
of
do
it.
Wicking beds.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a few options out there and we'll do a focus on them in the next few weeks because it's like getting round to veggie growing season.
Sure is. We're in Connolly talking about a mango tree. Eric, good morning.
Good morning. Love your show.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
Lots of good information. I have a garden patch up in the back of the garden. It's an area of about 50 square metres. There's a couple of mango trees. There's a longan tree. There's a fig tree. So it's very shady corner. And I've tried a few different things underneath. Nothing seems to survive.
Are you looking for something edible and what is the purpose? Just because you want to utilise the space and make it more productive?
Yes, yes, that would be. And also all your talk about the bugs being good in the garden.
Absolutely.
It would be good for that too.
For sure. I think probably herbs would be good. Keeping them out so that you can still do your mulching and feeding of your mango tree. I know a lot of people would use sweet potatoes, but you don't want the tubers developing amongst the roots of your mango. So you could put them out further than that and allow the leafy part to trail under the mango tree. Nasturtiums are very good and very easy, and they will cover the ground seasonally. They're starting to pop up now. They will bring in bees to your garden and also keep the white cabbage butterflies away from other plants. And they are a great weed suppressant as well. So
how do they keep the white cabbage moth away? Are they attracted to them?
Yep, supposedly they're attracted. So mixing things up gives the white cabbage butterfly something else rather than it going to your veggies. It probably still will. And caterpillars have an important role in the ecosystem as well. But this will help mix it up so they're not totally going to target one plant, hopefully. There's a range of thyme available. I picked up a couple at the nursery the other day, tiny little pink flowers. So they'll bring in different bugs. You can get variegated, you can get golden thyme, and they make a great ground cover.
And they smell great,
And mints. Yeah, mints grow very easily. They do like a lot of water, but once again, you can get a variety of different colours, and they flower and they bring in more bugs. Coriander, you could throw some seeds around now and let them grow as well. You could also grow lettuce around the base and let them...
It's quite a large... Sorry, it's quite a large area, and I've tried some of the other shade-loving plants. They all seem to just die.
All right. Well, now that it's autumn, winter, we're going into a different season. So, you know, the summer that we've just gone through, if they lacked any water, a lot of things might have turned up their toes.
There's plenty of water because I have a bore.
Okay. All right. So that's ruling it out. But planting something that will grow in this season is probably a key. And if you go to a nursery now, if you go to the herb section or your edible vegetable section or even your flower section, Eric, you'll find a lot on offer that could be planted now. But just check with the horticulturalist on duty that it is the right time.
All right. Terrific. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
All right.
Thanks, Eric.
Bye.
All right. We're having a short break. When we return, we're chatting with Lynn and Laureen. Stay with us. Curtain Radio. And we're back straight out to the lines. We're in Bentley saying good morning to Lynn. How's it going?
Oh, good morning. Thank you for a wonderful show to start with. But, Faye, I've got a passion fruit, golden, the Sunshine Special. I've had it for about 5 years. probably just a little bit short of 5 years. And I was away for 7 months in the year. And it's got very straggly. We had a very good season last year, and I know that every second year is a different year. What is your suggestion? Should I...
Lynn, plant another one. Plant another one in October. It's probably getting to the end of its life. Traditionally, passion fruits were good for 4 years, so you need to do succession planting. At the same time you plant your new one around October, cut back the one that you've got by about a third.
Okay.
And you might be able to get a bit more time from it, but your Sunshine Special can be fruiting within 6 months. Of course, you plant your traditional liver underneath because that's what we've always done. That's what our dad did, and we know it works.
What do we plant underneath?
A liver, lamb's fry.
Oh, goodness.
Yep. Don't plant a passion fruit without it, Lynn.
You heard it here on Let's Talk Gardening, Lynn. Yep.
Oh, wow. Well, the good old days were the best days.
They were, I think.
Good advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And the other thing, I've noticed that the stem is sort of, it's brown and it's sort of a little bit shriveling. So you're probably right. It's probably seen its day a little bit.
Yeah. The easiest thing to do would just be not bother about it through winter, just rip it out and be ready to start again.
Okay, so when do I plant it in winter?
October.
October. Okay, dear. Thank you.
All right. Bye,
Lynn. Thanks, Lynn.
Have a great weekend.
You
bye,
too.
Love.
Now we're heading to Gooseberry Hill. Laureen, thanks for waiting.
Oh, good morning, ladies. Look, I'm going away in next week off to Japan for 3 weeks, and I've got a lot of indoor plants, and I'm wanting to know, should I soak them in a bucket of sea salt liquid, mixed with water, obviously, to give them a good boost before going away, and also put them in the laundry trough with water so they can stay watered? And what's the other thing to keep the soil water retention? Oh, I can't think of the words.
Wetting agent?
Wetting agent, yeah.
Lorraine, how often do you water them now?
Oh, not as often as I should. Some I've been told are overwatered, underwatered. So I try to do it once a fortnight. So
okay.
I did it a week ago, so I'm wondering whether I need to do it again.
If you're watering fortnightly, yeah, and that's okay, I almost feel like with the temperature dropping, if you put them in the bathtub, you could. Oh, what would
you're up the hill, so it's quite cool. I live up around there as well, so it's getting quite cool at night. So
you reckon they're going to be all right for 3 weeks?
I reckon you give them a soak in the night before you leave, and you let them go.
Yeah,
you could put a little bit of water in the bath to get them through the first week, and then once that dries up, they'd be all right, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you know, if they're wilting on that 2 weeks, then you know that you're only just getting there. If they're still not wilting or anything, then you might still have the other 7 days up your sleeve anyway.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I mean, I've got a lot of them outside under the patio, and they've got shade blinds that, you know, they don't get them. They get morning sun, but no afternoon sun. So some are indoors and some are out under the patio.
The patio may have more issue because obviously you've got the easterlies blowing through in the morning and stuff.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So that will dry them out a bit more than anything. I think my patio ones are on every 5 days at the moment, 5 to 6.
Got someone coming in to water your patio ones?
Well, my daughter says she will, but whether she will is another thing.
Yeah.
Well, she does a weekly watering on the patio. I think you'd be more than safe. And then if she did like even just a real average job of your indoor plants midway through, it's probably going to be enough.
To suffice.
Yeah. Okie dokie. And what can I use to keep the water retention, so they're not sort of drying out on the top? I can't think of what you call it.
A bit of mulch.
Well, not so much the mulch.
No, just be a wedding agent. Like
a wedding agent.
Wedding agent, yes, yeah. Wedding agent. Which wedding agent would you recommend?
I like Eco Wet, Laureen. And you can get that at a lot of your reputable nurseries like Waldex and Dawson's and those places. That's my personal preference, but Faye?
There's also a seaweed combination of wetting agent that gives your plants a bit of a boost as well.
Mm. Okie dokie. Oh, well, I just cross my fingers and hope they all survive.
We're like that too, Laureen. We're going away for a week and we feel the same way.
I hope you haven't had to move as many plants as I have.
No. Well, some have gone outside to get a bit of extra light, but I'll bring those back in, yeah.
All right, good luck and happy holidaying.
Okay, thanks so much. Thanks, ladies. Bye.
So many people going to Japan too at the moment. It's a very popular destination. I think it's well-priced that's as well as being a beautiful place to go. And the gardens over there, I'm told, second to none.
Mm, absolutely. Mm. I just need to quickly follow up. The garden that is on the calendar for the National Seniors Perth branch, run by Adolf, is Sparta Lane in Canning Vale. If you are interested, I have the correct phone number here now. It is 0413 129 707. Okay.
All right. We'll hold those details at reception for you. Daniel, thank you so very, very much for taking time out of your weekend. Are you going back to the nursery now?
Straight back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weekend's your busy time, yeah? What days are you open?
Oh, well, that's our retail days. So
Saturday and Sunday
from 10 till 4.
Right.
Yeah.
Got you.
Of course, we've got Easter coming up, so we've got a bit of extra hours there. But keep
will you be doing, what days will you be open?
Saturday, Sunday and the Monday.
And the Monday as well. Good time. I reckon Easter weekend's the best gardening weekend opportunity.
It is, and it's normally a little bit quieter because most people are going away. So if you're floating around the city.
Bonus.
It's a good thing to do. Yeah, it's normally not too bad, really. Yeah. So it's definitely a good weekend.
All right. Thanking Bev Daring and John Glidden. Faye Curry, you've got anything you want to add, lady?
Yeah, sorry, we're not going to be here.
We're not here.
Not sorry.
Sorry,
we'll
not
be
sorry.
At the Melbourne Flower Show, everyone. So
definitely
see
not
you in
sorry.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll be back the following Saturday. Chris Bartlett will be in the chair playing his music between 8 and 10. My gardenism for the morning is, there is a harmony in autumn and a luster in its sky, which through the summer is not heard or seen. As if it could not be, as if it had not been. Now, stay with us for George Minoli up next with the classic 60s. We look forward to speaking with you in a fortnight's time, Saturday. We'll do it all again. Happy gardening, everyone. Take care. We hope you've enjoyed listening to another edition of Let's Talk Gardening on Curtin Radio. Happy gardening.